football on Off the Ball.
Some were bought for a system, but Manchester United are trying to bring players in that can play multiple systems so that when a manager leaves, the whole club isn't rocked. And I actually agree with that idea.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.
Hello, welcome along to a very special episode of The Kickoff, because I am delighted to say that there is an iconic voice about to join me on the show. He has been the voice of some of the most iconic Irish footballing moments, like this.
David O'Leary is entrusted with the responsibility of taking the penalty that could send Ireland into the quarterfinals of the World Cup. This kick can decide it all. The nation holds its breath. Yes, we're there!
Match commentator George Hamilton joins me on the show. George, I'm delighted to have you on.
And I'm delighted that you asked me, Carl. Delighted to be here. Thank you.
How are things with you at the moment?
Very good. Still trucking away, still doing a bit for Premier Sports. It's just something that I've done for so long and I still enjoy doing it. So I think, you know, why not carry on when you can? And I get a great deal of pleasure out of doing so.
So how many games would you do for Premier Sports now in a season?
Well, it depends really on what they require, but it's around about 15 is generally the average. So, you know, it's not as extensive as it was on RTE, but that's just the way it is. I'm not as young as I used to be. I don't do as much as I did before. And I got the Lyric FM thing going on as well. So it's a nice combination, you know, the music and the sport together. And it keeps me busy without overloading me in a way that a younger person might wish to be overloaded or be prepared to be overloaded.
Yeah, I have to say the name of your Lyric radio show is perfect. The Hamilton Scores.
Well, I can't claim any credit for that. And that was that one of the original producers came up with that, Gail Henry. And there's a good bit of background to that, because they thought about calling it Off the Ball, but you guys had got in first.
Yeah.
Because the idea was, you know, I was commentating all through the week and then at the weekend we'd be doing this, and they thought Off the Ball would be quite a good title. But unfortunately, you guys had got in first, so they had to come up with something else.
We got there before you. The Hamilton Scores, I think it works perfect. I think it works absolutely perfect. And do you miss the Ireland games now? You worked with RTE for over 40 years. It's an incredible run you have, and you had some incredible days, incredible moments, which we'll touch on. But do you miss it now, or are you glad?
Well, I won't say I'm glad, but I still enjoy it, and I'm still watching it, and I enjoy watching it. And, you know, I started off once upon a time, and somebody, you know, had moved on through their career. And so it's the same with me. You know, I get to the point where there's got to be a new generation taking over, and that is very much the case. And the landscape has changed a lot too. The commentating landscape has changed a lot too. There's a lot more of what we call off tube, and commentary is done from a studio rather than actually at the venue. So it's not quite the same as it was when I was traveling and Ireland were going to European Championships and World Cups back in the day. And those lines that you mentioned earlier on were part and parcel of it all. So it's changed, and I don't miss comedy because I'm still doing it. Yeah. The Ireland games specifically, I see them. I might be at them as well, and it's enjoyable to be there or to even just watch it, because you still get caught up in it, and there isn't the added pressure of getting to the game and getting from the game and all the ancillaries that go around it, because it's not just about the 90 minutes that you're on the air.
What are those days like when it's a big match day and kickoff is at 8 p.m. that evening? Are you nervous throughout the day? I'm talking maybe a big World Cup qualifier or a World Cup game that Ireland would have been in. Obviously, you've commentated on the biggest ones that we've had. So what are those days like? Are they full of excitement or trepidation, or how do you feel?
Well, yeah, you've hit the nail on the head. They are full of excitement and trepidation. And, you know, you think back to special occasions wherever they were and whatever team they involved, but specifically Ireland, when it's Ireland involved and you're wanting them to do well. So you get up in the morning, much like a player would, looking ahead to the evening, and it's on your mind all through the day, and you cannot get away from that. It's just something that is part and parcel of the reason that you're there. You're also, I won't say consumed with, but you are aware of what I think the late Eamon Andrews, it was called performance anxiety, or it might have been Terry Wogan. When asked, do you get nervous? No, the answer is no, because you know you can do the job like a player, but you do get performance anxiety, hoping that it'll go right, hoping that you won't commit a blunder, hoping that you won't do something that mars the broadcast in any way, in much the same way as a player would not want to make the mistake like a Chelsea goalkeeper against Arsenal recently that presents him with a goal. You know, it's very, very, very similar. And it is on your mind all through the day, and you don't want to distract yourself in any way. Though sometimes you need a little bit of distraction. And that happened to me one day when I was in Basel to cover Switzerland against Ireland. And I thought it might be nice because it was only a 40-mile train journey to Freiburg, which had been the first place I'd visited in Germany all those years before. So to take my mind off things, I caught a morning train to Freiburg and had a lunch in Freiburg and a little wander around the places I'd been as a 17-year-old boy, looking at the old Gothic cathedral, enjoying, in fact, everything about being back in Freiburg and getting all those memories back. And then I got back on the train, good time, mid-afternoon, thinking, this will be wonderful. I got back to Switzerland and back in time for the match. And I get on the train, and there are quite a lot of Irish fans on the train. And I go into the restaurant car to get myself a cup of coffee. And there are these lads in Irish shirts, and they're standing at one of those, you know, stand-up tables where you can have your food and drink.
Yeah.
And they recognize me, call me over, and I joined them. So there I am with these two lads from Donegal in Ireland shirts, and I'm in my jacket and no tie at this point.
Okay.
And then it suddenly strikes me as I see progressing from the other end of the restaurant car to border guards, Swiss border guards. And I think, gosh, Switzerland isn't in the EU. I don't actually have free passage. And what's more, I don't actually have my passport.
All right.
So what is going to happen with these guys? It cost me, and I can't get back into Switzerland to do the game on that night. Anyway, luck, as luck would have it, because it was a train full of Irish and green shirts, and I was with two lads in green shirts, they passed me by. They weren't interested in any documentation because they reckoned it was just a train full of football fans on the way to the match. I got away with that one.
Oh, you're lucky. You weren't going to make that mistake again.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Have passport, will travel. Have passport, will travel with me. Yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I can imagine there was a sigh of relief there. I'd imagine your head was spinning when you realised there could be a chance that I'll miss this game. What happens? Who's going to do the match commentating?
Oh, yeah, I know. You don't want to think too much about it. You just hope that it'll work out somehow. But it did. It did.
Yeah.
And I thank those two lads from Donegal, whose names, of course, I can't remember anymore.
Yeah, but they'll remember the story as well, saying it was some crack having George in that train, wasn't it? That was some crack. How much work would go into a match like that? In terms of the opposing team and who they're playing, and also, which something that you are fantastic at, is the pronunciation of names of foreign players and things like that. Do you put a lot of work into that? I would imagine you do.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I always say a game is like a full day's work. Whether you do it in a full day or not, it takes the full 8 hours to get yourself in tune for what's coming. It never gets any more difficult in the sense that it's ongoing from season to season. I'm often asked, how do you know all these players? Well, the fact is, the first season I ever did all those years ago was the most difficult one, because after that, the same players are rolling over and rolling over, and you're never really presented, except say at a World Cup or a European Championship, with 22 that you've never seen before. Mm. Because as you say, you're going to know the Irish team, and you most likely know most of the opposition if they're a half decent team, because they will be Champions League players and you're covering the Champions League as well. So they're not necessarily strangers to you. But yeah, you do home in on the ones that you don't know. That's I suppose part of the trick. And the business about the pronunciations, well, I was a linguist in my time. My degree was in German and French. And so I've been a bit of a stickler for getting things right in the pronunciation department.
Okay.
And there are straightforward ways. Before a site like Forvo now, which will tell you how to pronounce names, before the internet did that for you and you had to do your own research, it was really quite simple because you're in a commentary box and along the way is a guy commentating for the opposition. And if you don't know a name, you ask him. And similarly, he'll ask you, do you say McGrath or McGrath, Moran or Moran? You know, it's very simple. But there was one incident that stands out in my mind, and it was a match involving the Dutch at the World Cup in Germany in 2006 in Nuremberg. And there was a new guy playing at centre forward for the Netherlands. And I looked around the commentary area and I couldn't identify a Dutch commentator. So I had a bit of a brainwave and I left and I went back out of the stand into the concourse at the back. And I went up to the first guy in an orange shirt and I said, how do you pronounce this guy's name? And he told me. And then I thought, well, he could be having a laugh. So I'll ask another one. Mm. So in the end, I asked three or four different Dutch people independently what the player's name was. And then I knew that I had it correct. And I was able to call with confidence the name of a player who ended up playing for Liverpool, Dirk Kuyt.
Okay.
But if you look at his name, you're not going to get Kuyt out of it, are you?
No, yeah, you had to make sure. Yeah. A lot of the games you mentioned there earlier, a lot of the games are off tube now. The beauty of it back in the day, I suppose, was that you were sent off to these places like Basel and you were sent to stadiums across Europe and across the world. And it is off tube now. And I guess the danger of doing games off tube, that's just the way it is. That's not the match commentator's choice. That's the broadcaster's choice. And I can totally understand it's a cost saving method. But I mean, there must be something lost in the art of commentating then, because you are, I'd imagine you're only seeing what the viewer is seeing. Am I right
in saying that? That's exactly it. That's exactly it.
There's a danger of missing out on things.
There is, of course. And it happens. It can happen. I mean, there was the famous occasion where I was called in to do a game involving the Republic of Ireland in a tournament that was called the US Cup. It was kind of a warm-up for the World Cup in 1994. So that was an invitational tournament in the summer of 1992. And RTE only got the rights very late. So they weren't able to make the arrangements for a travel and a television commentary position and so on. So I was pressed into service back in Dublin. And that was all fine. The game was going well. But we're talking here about United States coverage when Major League Soccer was not huge and they weren't necessarily as clued into how the game of soccer works, like 1992 compared to today. So the coverage was a bit ropey, shall we say. Anyway, the game is progressing. Things are going okay, not so well for Ireland, but they're going okay from a broadcast point of view, until an incident when Maldini plays this great ball through to Signori, and Signori is coming in on goal, and out comes Paddy Bonner and brings him down in the penalty area. So clearly penalty, referee blows the whistle, points to the spot, and immediately the replays start. And the replays continue and continue and continue. And we have this foul by Bonner on the Italian forward Signori from every conceivable angle. And I'm thinking, you know, this is a clear goal scoring opportunity. Paddy Bonner has to be sent off. So I call it, Bonner's sent off.
Yeah.
But I don't see it. And I could have been made a complete fool if the referee had been like the TV director and hadn't been up to speed in terms of what went on in a football match. Thankfully for me, the referee was of the same opinion and Paddy Bonner was sent off, because when the picture resumed live, what was it? Only Jerry Payton standing on the goal line preparing to face the penalty.
Okay.
So, okay, that's fine.
You got away
with
it.
Right.
Yeah.
He got away with a huge sigh of relief. Penalty's taken. I can't remember what happened after that, other than the fact that it then struck me that Ireland were now down to 10 men. And who had been sacrificed to let Jerry Payton on? Well, that was simply resolved, but it took a little while. I simply ticked off every Irish outfield player as I saw him, until I was left with one who hadn't been ticked off. And I said, and of course, the Irish defence is slightly unbalanced now because Dennis Irwin had to be sacrificed to allow Jerry Payton to come on to replace the red-carded Paddy Bonner. And that was how it happened. God.
So you were in one moment still trying to follow the play and commentate on the play that's seeing in front of you, while also saying, okay, I've mentioned him, I see him. I don't have a left back. Okay, Dennis Irwin is the man who's gone. You're mentioning Paddy Bonner, and it does remind me of you have a lot of iconic moments, but one of them is the iconic line, "Danger here." Can you talk to me about that one? Because it's gone down in Irish sporting folklore now. But I mean, at the time, you were kind of talking about Paddy Bonner and how well he was doing. Am I right?
Yeah, that's right. Can I quote you from my memoir?
Yes, please do.
Which was called, funnily enough, The Nation Holds Its Breath.
Yes.
So this is an innocent. We're in Hanover. It's Euro 88. Ronnie Whelan has scored with his shin pad from that long throw by Mick McCarthy. And the Soviet Union are trying to equalize. And the ball is in the hands of Dasayev, the Soviet goalkeeper. And so I start up and say, Bonner has gone 165 minutes of this tournament without conceding a goal. He's heading for his ninth consecutive shutout. Now, in the time it took me to say all that, what happened? The ball moved from Dasayev through the Soviet midfield, and suddenly it's at the feet of Oleg Protasov. And I say, danger here. And of course, Protasov scores and it's 1-1. So that's where that came from. But you talk about not making that mistake again. That's another one I did. Don't count chickens. You can't be counting chickens. So the ninth shutout never happened. Protasov scored and danger here became a website. Coleman was in the UK. Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Commentators bloopers, yeah.
it's a good blooper.
Funny story to go with that too, Cal. Shortly afterwards, I was in Mulligan's pub in Poolbeg Street in Dublin, and this guy came up to me and he said, "You're never going to believe this. I can't believe I'm talking to you, but we've just started this website called DangerHere.com. A guy called Paul Little, who writes books about football now, and you'll find him on the bookshelves in the sports section. But he and a mate had decided they were going to set up this website off the back of it, inspired by Coleman Bowles in the UK.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, it's such a great line. You know, you could have had so many blunders throughout your career, but I mean, if danger here is one of the top ones, you're not doing too bad. It's an iconic line. Obviously, the one that's I'd say brought up to you the whole time, if anyone ever meets you, and it's the name of your memoir, it's just so iconic. I was watching it back, but it's Italia 90 and David O'Leary is standing over the penalty. That line and that thought process to say a nation holds its breath is just so fantastic. Did you hear that summer before, or did it just come to you in the moment, or how prepped could you even be for something like that?
Well, you can't really, because the number of eventualities you'd have to go through to end up with David O'Leary taking the penalty to decide the match are such that you would be spending weeks coming up with likely scenarios. And then how do you actually find the right one at the right moment when it's all written down in like a volume full of notes? The great, late, great Harry Carpenter had a line about television comedy: say as little as possible, and when you do speak, be as helpful as you can. And I think I can see that, because when I started the BBC, I had great mentors who, you know, schooled me in the art of both radio and television commentary. And in a moment like that, you cannot allow yourself to get carried away, because you're trying to say as little as possible, but because your audience is actually taking it all in too. Just try to be as helpful as you can. So in that moment, I'm thinking, I've been told this match is being shown, this extra time, and then the shootout is being shown on the 6-1 news, as well as being on Network 2, which is what RT2 was called at the time. And there was no TV3 or Virgin Media in that era of 1990 World Cup. So there were two Irish television channels, and they were both showing the same thing, which meant that anybody who was watching Irish television at that moment was watching these pictures and listening to my voice. So this lodges itself in your brain, and you don't kind of make a conscious effort to acknowledge that to yourself, but the subconscious has clearly recognized it. And so when we get to the point where Paddy Bonner makes the save and then David O'Leary steps up to take the penalty, in my head is coming to the fore this thought that this is a really, really crucial moment. And if it's being watched, well, there's nobody else watching anything else. So everybody is watching this. And so when I've said this kick can decide it all, as O'Leary has put the ball down, and then it goes back to the wide shot of O'Leary facing the goalkeeper, and all I can think of is that everybody is on the edge of their seat. And then that was the line that came to me in the moment, because you can't script a commentary. You're depending on your presence of mind and skill in the business to deliver appropriate lines at appropriate moments. And that was the line that came to me.
The nation holds its breath. Yes, we're there!
With no forethought whatsoever. It was just the line that it struck me fitted the moment exactly. And so I said it, and then the rest is history.
Oh, it's fantastic. And then the, yes, we're there, is just, oh, it's brilliant as well. And you're just speaking for everyone, and you know back home, it's just chaos. And we kind of had that moment again with Darren Maloney and Ray Houghton when Troy Parrott got that goal against Hungary to make it 3-2 and get us into the World Cup qualifiers. And I was watching that back as well, and you always have a co-commentator with you. A lot of the time it would have been Ray. And Ray kind of loses himself in the moment of the Troy Parrott goal, and he's screaming along as well.
Queenie Kelleher. Scales is up after it. Scales wins the header. There's a chance. Yeah! Oh, there's the goal. There's the goal. That's Troy Parrott. That is unbelievable. He scored a hat-trick. And right at the death, Ireland have done it. I've never seen anything like it. Absolutely remarkable. Right at the end. Hungary had been caught, they were hanging on, it seems like, for the whole night, certainly when it went 2-2. This is just stunning. 3-2, the time is up, the referee has to finish the game. I've no voice left.
You know, sometimes you need that, don't you? You just need that. It kind of transfers into the homes, and it's exactly like how everyone else is feeling that's watching it, if you're an Irish person, of course.
Well, absolutely. And you know, you're supposed to be down the middle neutral, but at the same time, when you're commentating for Irish television on an Irish game, you're not going to be wholly neutral. You're obviously not going to be a fan with a microphone, because there is nothing more annoying than that. But at the same time, when the moment matters, and the yes, we're there in 1990 was when I lost my impartiality.
Yeah.
And the boys in Budapest were fully entitled to do the same thing. It was such an unbelievable moment when you consider the circumstances. I mean, they were on their way out when Hungary scored, first of all.
Yeah.
And then it became fairy tale stuff. And on top of the fairy tale was this cake with icing called Troy Parrott, who was getting a hat trick, you know. So the whole thing was set up for just such a reaction, and the boys delivered it.
Yeah, oh, and they delivered it so well. The future of commentating now, it seems to have changed a bit. You said a good quote there about say as little as...
Yeah, Harry Carpenter, he was the boxing commentator at the BBC for like 3 decades, and he was also a presenter on TV. So those of a certain vintage would remember him as a small, bespectacled man with a lovely delivery and a great enthusiasm for sport. He presented Sports Night midweek programme. He presented Grandstand, the Saturday afternoon show. He was the face of Wimbledon back in the day on the BBC, and also their golf coverage. So Harry said, the art of television commentary is to say as little as possible, and when you do speak, to be as helpful as you can. And you know, think back to the iconic England World Cup line that everybody knows. They think it's all over. It is now.
And here comes Hurst. He's got some fiddler on the pitch. They think it's all over. It is now. It's four.
Kenneth Wilson in 1966, when Geoff Hurst went in to score the fourth goal, which began with, some people are on the pitch. They think it's all over. Was where that came from. But that was just him reacting to the moment, saying as little as possible, but being as helpful as he could.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was. It is now. And England have won 4-2. England have won 4-2 in front. They can't be defeated now. So that's it in a nutshell. But you say it has changed. Of course it has changed, because there is so much more sport on TV now, and so many different sources for sport. Like back, as I made the point, you know, in 1990, there were only the two Irish television channels. And you think in the UK, for long enough, there were only the 4 television channels. I remember a headline in the Daily Telegraph when Clive Tilsley ended his association with ITV. Or they ended it with him, whichever way around it was. But Alan Tyre is a journalist, a TV reviewer in the Daily Telegraph, saying the last of the big beasts is gone. You know, there were people identified like John Motson and Barry Davis and Micheál O'Hare and Micheál Muirahertig and Jimmy McGee. You know, the era of that kind of commentator is over. Because there is now so much sport that there's no guarantee that you're going to hear the same voice when you tune in. It depends on which channel you're on as to who you hear, which wasn't the case back in the day. So it has changed immeasurably. And the point you make about a lot of it being off tube now means that the emphasis is rather different. You get a lot more statistics. And of course, there are so many more statistics around as well.
Yeah, so that's because that's kind of what I wanted to ask you, George, because it definitely feels like a lot of the commentary that you're watching now, it seems to be that they're trying to fill every moment. Look, this is coming from an opinion of a punter who just watches the game sitting on my couch. So I'm obviously an armchair expert here, and I get that. And you obviously are far more educated to have an opinion on this. But it just seems to me at times with some games that they seem to want to fill the dead space all the time. Mm. And it now seems to be a lot of the time you could actually, it's just conversation between commentator and co-commentator. And a lot of the time, watching back some of the old clips and watching back you, there's sometimes just silence, and that's all there needs to be, because you know you're watching the game, you can tell what's happening, you know. So I don't know, is there a need? Do some people feel the need to fill it with statistics?
Yeah, well, I think that that's part, something that has grown to from the off-tube situation, because if you're not there, you have nothing to add from being there. So you've got to add something to show that you know more than the viewer who's seeing exactly the same picture as you are, and you get sucked into this. Now, there are some things that are relevant, but I recall a conversation I had with Kevin Moran many years ago before a Manchester United game. I can't remember who they were playing, but Manchester United hadn't beaten this team for years. And I said to Kevin, is this weighing on your mind? And he said, not at all. Why would it? It's nothing to do with it. If we're going out to play 90 minutes, it doesn't have any relevance to us at all. So for a commentator to say it's all that time since is only a little aside.
Yeah.
It's not crucial or key. Mm. And it's those little things that are maybe, as Harry Carpenter said, being helpful. But it's not helpful to fill the time with verbiage. And, you know, there's that saying, which is a picture paints 1,000 words. You know, a television picture is the moving version of that picture that paints 1,000 words. And you don't need to say and state the obvious and say what's happening when the viewer can see it. You're there to be helpful.
Yeah, we've been blessed, haven't we, in this country with some great commentators. Yourself, Micheál Mura-Hurtig, Jimmy McGee, Marty Morrissey, Ger Canning, Darren Maloney. We are blessed with great
commentators. Michael Corcoran on the radio.
Yes, Michael, with the rugby. Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course. There's loads, and I know I'm missing a few. Local radio stations. I know I'm from Tipperary. Stephen Gleeson is a fantastic commentator as well, and you feel like he's actually out in the pitch hurling every ball when he's commentating.
Yeah.
But we are blessed, aren't we, with some fantastic commentators in this country.
Well, I think to draw the parallel with the UK and extend it beyond sport, you look at the number of people who have made it, Irish people who've made it in the UK media. There's something about the accents that we have that seem to appeal, and they appeal to us as well as across in the UK. And so you have situations where you've got Terry Wogan or you have an Eamon Andrews. And I think about it too, that the great sports report, 75 years old, on what was the Light programme, became Radio 2 and now 5 Live. That had four Irish presenters in its time, which is quite remarkable. There was Eamon Andrews, there was Liam Nolan, there was Desmond Lynham, and I did it for a bit as well. But if you think of it in those terms, this programme over 75 years, and nobody presented it for just a week or two. They were on it for a period. Four of the key people, and I was the least of them because I was a commentator as well, were Irish. So it's not really surprising that we should have such a plethora, if I can use that word, of wonderful voices to bring the sporting action alive on, you know, not only radio and TV, but also on streamers like Clubber and the rest. You know, it's just fabulous.
Did you commentate on many other sports in your career? I know it's predominantly football.
Yeah, I started off in rugby because I couldn't get into football when I was starting off in Belfast. And I did rugby for 30-odd years. Did three World Cups in rugby. Was in Paris the day Brian O'Driscoll scored the hat-trick. The first Irish win in Paris in goodness knows how long, 30-odd years. So I did a lot of rugby. I also did athletics. So I was on athletics in Olympics in particular, but also European and World Championships. And then later on, I did hockey and I did rowing. I did my first Olympic gold medal when the boys got the gold in Tokyo.
Tokyo, yeah.
They're home and hosed. They're ahead by a length. It's Ireland from Germany, and history is made on the water in Tokyo as Fintan McCarthy and Paula Donovan win gold. Gold for Ireland. Gold for Ireland. Silver for Germany. And the Italians come home in third place. And that is one more chapter of magnificence.
And I also commentated on the Irish women in the final of the Women's Hockey World Cup. So I've been across the board a bit.
Yeah.
But it's been mostly football, yeah.
Did you ever commentate on a GA match?
No, but I don't think that would be appropriate because your audience has to believe in you. And I've no background in GAA, so I would have been a complete interloper. And listen, you mentioned the GAA commentators and the great men that they are, and women too. But where would I fit in among all of that? Somebody else would have to not be doing it, let me do it. You know.
Yeah, it would have to be like one of those moments in Basel where, you know, someone might not make it to the stadium. They could be caught.
Yeah.
During the week, I saw Saipan and I knew I was going to be talking to you, George. And next thing, your voice features very early doors. I was expecting it, to be honest. I was waiting for your voice to feature somewhere. Have you any memories of those chaotic few days?
Yeah, well, I wasn't there. Tony O'Donoghue, as the football correspondent, was there. I was a commentator, pure and simple, for the World Cup. So I hadn't yet gone to Japan, as it would be. It was the Thursday before the opening match. So it's almost a week before the World Cup began. And I wasn't due to travel for a few days. So the story broke and I was invited onto the News at One on the radio. And I did my little piece on there. As Tony did his piece from Saipan. But not, by now it's nighttime in Saipan. There's the 9-hour time difference. And I'm kind of at a free as a bird in downtown Dublin because I've just been on the news. So I head into town and it's a lovely sunny day and I'm wearing like Hawaii 5-0 shirt or whatever. I'm dressed for the afternoon out. And I'm strolling down Grafton Street when I take a call and it's the BBC in Belfast. And they say, we were wondering, would you be available to talk to us about the Roy Keane situation on our Tea Time television news program? And I thought, well, yeah, why not? And then I thought, well, hang on a minute. What am I going to look like on TV? Yeah. So their studio was in South Frederick Street in downtown Dublin, yes. Not too far from where I actually was at the moment. And I thought, yeah, after having hung up and said I'd do it, I said, I'm going to have to do something. I haven't time to go back home to Delgany. So I'm going to have to get sorted here. So I went into Brown Thomas and I bought myself a shirt.
Oh, good man. Okay.
Yeah. And then my brand new shirt I wore on whatever it was called, Round 6 or whatever it's called.
Straight out of the package. You could still see the lines on the shoulders and down the arms. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, look at you. You see, forever the professional, George. You couldn't be going in your floral shirt with the button opened at the top.
No.
It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, George. I really appreciate it. And it's fantastic to have you on the show. And it's great anytime we hear you commentating on a match for Premier Sports. It's always nice to hear your voice. So best of luck with Everton and best of luck with the Lyric Show. I'm sure you're really enjoying that. You've been doing it for years, but it's such a nice thing to be able to do at the weekend.
Well, thank you. It's very, very kind of you to say so. Anybody fancies tuning? It's 10 to 1 on a 10 o'clock till 1 o'clock Saturday and Sunday. Yeah. Lyric, thanks for the opportunity to plug it.
Always here to give a hand. George Hamilton, thank you so much for joining me. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Thank you, Carl.
Sensational! The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.